tonight I want to talk about a stage in meditation practice, or actually spiritual practice, when we find ourselves suddenly at ease, at rest. This often comes after perhaps a long practice period or just years of practice that suddenly we don't have to keep working anymore. We're suddenly at this place of rest and ease. This is what this ox herding picture, this particular stage is pointing toward. So those of you who might be new tonight, we're exploring these 10 ox herding pictures, which are a way of really mapping out the spiritual path, spiritual practice. And there's different ways it shows up for each person. It's not linear. It's not necessarily progressive. And sometimes, at the same time, there's these stages we can recognize. So in this stage, or this image here, what's happened is that we've gone through this kind of very rigorous searching for the ox, or you could rephrase it as learning to practice in a more and more effective way, more deep way, learning to grapple with our minds, grapple with the hindrances, learning to have a sense of steadiness. And at some point we start to have some level of mastery, some level of ease around that. And then suddenly the technique falls away. So let's explore what happens there. What is absent in this stage? How can we help encourage that to arise? And then the shift of our practice that's needed when that arises in our practice. So first of all, in this, what's dropped away? Often there's a sense of time is dropped away. When we're in the midst of this stage, time seems to fade away. I mean, usually we're so focused on what's coming up next, what's come in the past, how long is this sick going to last, all those types of factors. When this stage arises, there's a sense of simple presence. There's nothing that needs to be changed. And some ways to work with that, to kind of start to incline ourselves to that stage, hints around that, is to work with our attitude around time. Simple ways, like when you're practicing, I mean, this is probably universal, that sometimes sits are a little bit of a bit of struggle. Like we just want the sit to be over, but we're trying to be good practitioners and we're sitting through our period. We start to look at the watch and start to say, okay, how much more time to go? When that arises, practice not looking at your clock and just feel that sense of urgency or that sense of impulse to look at the time and see if you can relax into that sensation of wanting to look. If you're able to shift in a certain way, time sometimes falls away. It doesn't matter how long the sit has to go or how much has happened. You're present. You're right here. As opposed to our, you know, impatient, that pushing the envelope of time. Start to sense that difference. Another thing that falls away in this stage is the sense of doing, the sense of that there's something that needs to be done. Okay, like I need to focus on my breath. I need to release that thought. There's a sense of having, maybe even subtly, just trying to relax a little bit more into that stillness, or trying to work with that subtle sense of friction with the moment. When this stage arises, it's like suddenly there's nothing that needs to be added or subtracted to the moment. There's a sense of perfection in how the moment actually is. And nothing needs to be changed. So a sense of contentment, a sense of ease, a sense of equanimity. Like nothing needs to, you don't need to go force something, you need to create anything different. The moment has a certain perfection, just how it is. Now, in our practice, we actually build this in right from the day one as we learn instructions. That we say, okay, focus and say on your breath. We don't say, look at your breath in order to criticize it or critique it or to change it in any way. But try to learn to allow the breath to be just how it is, right? And then often, like in intro classes that we're having in a couple of weeks, we learn how to change that, focus on different things like sensations of the body, sound, even eventually emotions and thought. And we start to learn this skill that something can arise in the moment. And we don't have to do anything with it. We can just simply observe it. So often it takes a lot of work because that's opposite of what we normally do with the moment. We're constantly judging it. We're constantly trying to change it. But in this stage, that's fallen away, that there's actually no impulse to do anything with other than simply be steady, be present. You're simply there. There's a sense of peace, a sense of ease as depicted in this image and this stage here. And even as we settle into that, it becomes a deeper sense. We start to become more subtle with where we're practicing and start to notice that subtle sense of me who's trying to do something. Sometimes it can feel like that, a little bit of a Dharma coach or Dharma teacher trying to tell you, okay, focus on this way or not that way. Just all that falls away. There's a sense of we're really relaxing in the moment. And the third aspect of this stage, there's other aspects too, but just talking about three, is that there's more quiet. There's more space between our thoughts. Normal day, as we know, thoughts are constantly arising. Thought arises and we tend to glom onto it. We get sticky to it. We want to elaborate. We want to kind of nurse that thought, or we want to push it away. We're constantly kind of struggling with the thinking mind or constantly getting lost in the thinking mind. In this stage, there's a natural quiet that's not built out of will. It's not built out of some effort. It just simply seems to be present. And when thoughts arise, there's a lot of space between the thoughts. You can actually see the beginning of a thought, and you can actually observe it as we, you know, try to teach. When we explore thought, we see thought, observe it just as another experience. But this is just happening naturally in this stage. That a thought arises, we see it, and then it passes away without us having to engage or comment upon it or make more thoughts around it. Like the analogy from the Tibetan meditation masters, like the blue sky holds the clouds that go through it. And that's actually our experience in this stage. Now, how to work with this, how to kind of try to quiet the mind. Because so often how many of us have come to meditation with the aim to try to quiet our minds? It's such a common thing I hear when I teach these intro classes and just talking with people. The mind is, you know, there's so much content, so much worry, so much fantasy. How can I relax the thinking mind? The paradox is that as long as we have that thought that we have this belief that thought is a problem, it actually reinforces thinking. Here's a simple example that anyone have a song stuck in their head ever? You know, and if you're meditating and you don't really want that song stuck in your head, you want to get rid of it. But you just keeps, you know, jingling along, keeps going over and over again. What happens, at least for me, when those songs arise, which is a form of thinking, and I see it, I don't want it, I actually set up a level of friction and struggle with that, which is really thought kind of trying to fix thought and just kind of maintains that. But when a song arises, for example, and there's no friction with that song, it's arising, I notice the reactions in the body, the echoes of emotion, without any friction, then that song has a very short lifespan. And this is really the nature of working with thought. I sometimes think of it as if we walked out into a still mountain lake with no ripples at all. And we noticed that we walked out, we created more ripples. And then we're trying to get those ripples to stop by splashing, you know, using our hands to stop the ripples. We, of course, are making more and more ripples. That's a bit how it is with thought, that when our thoughts arise, when we try to stop it through our mind, thoughts just kind of proliferate. So learning to relax with the fact that our minds think. Relax with the fact that that's just what the mind does. Then paradoxically, these still moments start to happen more and more, especially as we start to understand the deeper nature of what's driving our thinking mind. in these moments of stillness, they start to stretch out. There's much more space between our thoughts. So these three aspects fall away in this stage or this picture. The time falls away, the sense of having to do, and also thought starts to quiet down quite markedly. So that all sounds really interesting and nice, right? But how do we make that happen? How do we get more of that? How do we experience that if we haven't experienced it? So unfortunately, it's a bit like the dog chasing its tail, that the more we try to get it, the further that tail gets away. You know, we just start to chase ourselves more and more. So sometimes this arises from sustained practice. This is kind of a traditional way. You go on a retreat, you practice, you know, for days and days, and your mind starts to naturally quiet down. At the same time, you're building your steadiness of attention. So there's an accessibility to the moment that just naturally arises. And sometimes we just fall into these spaces. And different techniques are kind of designed to incline us toward that. So retreat practice certainly is very beneficial. But how do we work with that in daily life? How do we work with it in our own busyness of our minds? And that's something we're going to explore in the small groups. And that's the power of investigation, the power of inquiry, the willingness to look in a way that starts to see what's not seen, in a way that doesn't reinforce that sense of me. This sincerity of questioning, of looking, not from what so much from a intellectual standpoint, but much more of a real-time exploration, feeling what's actually showing up right in this moment in my body, in my heart, and in my mind. Actually be able to observe it, see it, without judging it, without trying to change it, but just to see it and start to incline that investigation to see how is that what's arising, what I'm seeing, related to my suffering? How is it related to my contraction of my heart? How is it related to that releasing of the heart, releasing of that contraction of the heart? So the Buddha was really a master at this. There's suttas that describe his own process of exploring and seeing clearer and more clearly what caused suffering. What's really the root of that? And also he taught many people how to do that, guided them through investigation, through questions. One I brought up last week was when he was talking to his son, Rahula. And Rahula, he's basically asking him to look at something very ordinary, like the experience of seeing. And just as right now, as you're sitting, listening, notice how your eyes, you kind of take that for granted, that you're seeing. And there's actually the capacity, if we do have sight, which is not always guaranteed, right? But if we actually can see, can substitute hearing, taste, anything like that. When we see something, there's the intact organ of the eye that's actually seeing. And so the Buddha is talking to his son and saying, okay, is the eye, do you think, is it constant or inconstant? Does the eye always stay the same? And as I mentioned last week, I've been teaching for about since 2006, so I guess that's a few years now. I've noticed my font in my talks has gotten bigger and bigger as my eyesight degrades. So you're going to get into that. You know, if you have good eyesight, you start to get into the 40s, 50s, you start to find yourself squinting. Now, of course, this is a natural part of aging, but showing that eyes are not constant, they're not consistent, they're subject to change. Right? So Rahula said, yeah, they're inconsistent. You might get some dust in your eye, you might get an eye injury, you might lose your sight. It's not guaranteed. And so his son says, who's a monk, says it's inconsistent, it's not steady, it's not unchanging. So the Buddha follows up with another question. This is the art of investigation. You see something and you look a little bit deeper. The next question he asks is, what is inconsistent, easeful or stressful? Okay. Is it easeful or stressful? Is it easy to find that your eye is degrading, that you need a new prescription? Is it easy to not be able to see as clearly as you could when you were younger? Is it easy to have lost your sight when you used to have it? You know, so the son says, Rahula says, it was stressful. And then finally, this is the crux of it. Is it fitting to regard what is inconsistent, stressful, subject to change as this is mine? This is myself. This is what I am. And so when you let that sink in for a second, because our assumption of self, of me, is something that is steady, that is not changing. It's like, okay, I'm kind of go through these experiences, and there's always the me who's kind of experiencing that. But something like our eye, like that's my eye, that relates to who I am. Is that, because it's inconsistent, is that really a good idea to say that it's I or me? This is what I am. So the sutta really starts to, he teaches Rahula and teaches us how to see more and more clearly these assumptions. That's the art of investigation. We see something we've taken as being true to actually see that it's not as true as we thought it was. Again, not so much from an intellectual standpoint, but a really direct seeing. So the Buddha goes ahead and looks at different aspects of the sense gates and different, you know, senses of like form, the different aggregates. At the end of the sutta, Venerable Rahula, the monk, is actually becomes awakened. He awakens fully from that exploration. So I like this sutta because it's one of the secrets to practicing in the midst of our busy lives. Now, how do we actually use investigation to look more clearly? In the midst of a busy life, in the midst of relationships, in the midst of being a parent, how do we actually do this, a grandparent? And it just takes that sincerity and that willingness to look. And we'll teach that technique tonight in the discussion. Hopefully that will give you a really good sense of it. That's who that quality of the vertical question that my teacher, Rodney Smith, often explored and talked about. And so finally, when this shift happens in our practice, when we shift from this kind of constantly having to work the meditation, to do the meditation, and we just find ourselves, I'm just present. I'm actually just here. I'm just actually observing. And we shift to a much more subtle way of practicing. Start to notice the more subtle ways that we contract, the subtle ways we identify. I remember Rodney talked about this once on an interview with me on a retreat. It's like he was saying, okay, you're really, you know, really observing the stillness. You're really seeing the stillness. Now it's time for you to allow yourself to wade into the stillness, to allow that stillness to rise within you. And that's our shift of practice. We start to see, you know, how much more can I surrender? How much more can I release? And then the practice starts to change from being much less will-driven to much more something else is driving us or pulling us through. And it's really something like our heart is pulling us into the next, what is next after this. All right, so just a few words summarizing last week's talk. And now we'll take about a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back and we'll do some dyads. So one person with another person. And it's not something to get socially anxious about. You're just going to be asking one simple question, kind of really helping the other person deepen into their practice, reminding them to look a little more. Just simply repeating that question. And then we'll switch roles and go back and forth. And many people find this a very helpful practice. So we'll come back at 8:06 or so, and I'll introduce that more fully. And just remembering the Donna baskets here in the room, that's how Sims supports our activities. That's how I make my livelihood. And also online, Jackie, if you could offer that for people. It's also important for those online to support Sims and the teaching. okay, we'll come back in 5 minutes and do some dyads. And then we'll do that for about 20 minutes and have some large group discussion. All right, see you back in a few minutes. All right, welcome back. All right, so let me explain dyad process for you. So dyads, again, it's, think of it as a kind of out loud meditation that you're having someone else help guide you to focus more clearly on a particular point of inquiry. So the way we do this is we do 5 minutes a person and then do a cycle of that and switch back and do that again. And we'll be asking a simple question. And we want to elicit this vertical question. This thing that brings us into the middle of this moment without any sense of having to do anything other than simply see. So, but try to get there, try to force it, it won't work so well. You have to kind of just trust the process. And the way it works is we'll do a vertical question like, maybe we want to ultimately get to where is there stillness in this moment? Where is there stillness right in this moment? So when we hear that question, instead of going into our mind, we want to see where is it right in this moment? Using just my senses, just using my experience, where is the stillness present? Now, Rodney often did it. The first question actually elicited what's opposite of that quality. So for example, we'd say, where is there noise in this moment? So you might just start by noticing, okay, what's like to close my eyes and just open to my senses and I hear, okay, there's the fan and there's my mind kind of thinking about tomorrow. So then the person would ask the question again, where's there noise in this moment? And then again, we would just see what's present and go into that, seeing whatever arises. So the person asking the question just asks the question. That's all they do. They don't elaborate. They don't comment. They just ask that question. And the person who hears that question, each moment, check in to see actually what's present. See where that question takes you. Be willing to be surprised. Let it go places you may not expect. All right, does that make sense? Kind of? All right, so usually if we're all in person, I would get you set up in groups, but let me do that set up and then we'll have you choose groups. Actually, here in the room, when you find, I don't know if we have an odd or even, let's see if we can get an even number. Find one other person and pair up with them if you like. Okay, perfect. Okay, so those online, I'm going to put you in groups. And some of you might be alone for a moment and I'll move you around. Okay, so when we start, I'll give you notice when it's time to switch roles and just decide who was going to go first. And then I'll pull you back out for the next question. So in terms of the question to ask, if you did the homework and you have a vertical question that really works for you, then use that. Tell your partner that. But if you don't have one, you might use one of the two. You might use where is there stillness and where is there compassion? Okay, so starting with the opposite of that, where is there noise in this moment? Where is there noise in this moment? Or you can ask yourself for compassion, where is there non-compassion? Where is there hatred? Where is there, what's the opposite of compassion? A closeness of heart. And just see what arises from that. Right? Does that make sense? All right. So let me go ahead and start here in the room and I'll ring the bell to bring us back. And those online, you've been invited to join. Okay, staying with your partner and those online, we'll put you back together in a moment. Just taking a couple moments to just sit quietly, just feeling whatever echoes might be going through the body, mind. Now we'll do one more cycle of these questions. And I know there was one group of three online, so you can just kind of manage that. Either one person could just listen, or you could kind of take turns. So the next question is kind of the opposite of the last question. So if you had, where is there noise in this moment? Where is there stillness? Each time you hear the question, the responder, I invite you to look right there with a freshness, with an innocence. You know, it doesn't matter if you say the same answer again and again, but just look more closely to see where actually is there stillness in this moment? Or maybe where is there compassion in this moment? So choose which one, or if you have your own vertical question that you've crafted, then please use that. All right, so let's have those in the room. You can go ahead and start. And those online, let's put you back together. Sorry, those online couldn't hear that. I was on a roll too. All right, let me just back up. So first of all, I was apologizing for those online that I hit the wrong button. So instead of opening the old rooms, I recreated the rooms. So hopefully that wasn't too much of an adjustment for you. And I was just saying, the Buddha famously said that he taught one thing only, dukkha and the end of dukkha. I know that's two things, but you know, it's one message. And how that pairing of those questions mirrors that. That sometimes in our practice, it's really helpful to notice where our contraction is. Where's our stuck spot? Where we identify, where are we clinging, where are we suffering? Noticing that, right? Noticing, practicing without sense of just observing without judging, without changing, just to see it really in a clear way. And it's also equally helpful to notice where the release of that is, where the release of that suffering is. And so depending on what's going on or where the edge is, you can kind of just try both and see which one gives you more purchase. Sometimes if you're trying to kind of get over the problem and you're trying to use a kind of a chutes and ladder technique of kind of jumping over all the suffering, taking a ladder up, it's not, you know, asking that second question, that question of where is your stillness, isn't going to work so well perhaps. But instead, if you just say, okay, where is your suffering? Where's the noise right now? Let me actually, instead of always trying to avoid it, manage it, get rid of it, let me actually touch it. Let me actually make contact with it. That contact then allows the stillness to start to arise. So I'm curious how that experience was for you. If you have any questions about what you noticed or would like to share anything, you're welcome to. Those online, if you could raise your hand. And I can call on you. And those in the room, you could also raise your hand. Yeah, Alan, do you mind coming up so they can hear you online? Okay, so tell me if you can hear. Can you hear Alan once he picks it up?
Hi. Can okay. You hear me online?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I just wanted to share, you know, normally I expect, getting into diets, having those conversations, to bring kind of presence, directness, that kind of thing. And, you know, this time it was unexpected. It was a little disorienting. It was a little, it's heartfelt and emotional, but just in some surprising ways. So it always is surprising.
So the comment was, I'll switch back so they can see me, but you can stay there for a second, Alan, in case we have more follow-up. The sense of that often the dyads, you've had the experience in the past that would lead to a quality of stillness, collectedness, you know, presence. But today it was a little bit more, a little disorienting, I think you said, a little bit.
Yeah, not in a bad way, a very heartfelt way, but in a, it was very like real in a non, you know, intellectual, in a non-expected way.
Yes.
It was almost like my expectation versus the reality of the experience. It was very real in a way I hadn't anticipated it.
Good. So the sense of realness, that sense of unexpectedness, and really, you mentioned a couple times that heartfeltness. And I think that's showing, you know, when you ask investigation, sometimes we look, we think we already know the answer. We know what we're going to expect, what our experience is going to be. But if we're able to be actually innocent in that process, it often does have a surprising quality. And that sense of little disorientation, not quite sure where you are, is actually kind of a marker, if you will, that that sense of you is being a little eroded, is being a little thinned. Like what you took as being solid, this is who and what I am, is like because of the unexpectedness, you're seeing things in a different way. So you're less defined, less who you are. And that's really the landscape of the practice, is learning how to, in some ways, deconstruct ourselves to see kind of through that illusion of self and see what's on the other side of that, what's on their side of that identification. And that's what these pictures really explore and teach.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, Alan. All right, how about back online? Anyone have anything they'd like to ask or share? All right, Lauren, go ahead. You're still muted.
There we go. I was surprised that the first part when I was answering, I felt like there was a lot of movement in the stillness. So when I felt still, it was quiet, it was still, but there was a movement. There was kind of a sense of I don't know. It was not still, but it felt still. So there was this movement feeling, you know, but it wasn't agitation. It was very harmonious. So that was kind of surprised me, you know, that I kept feeling this, because I felt there was this connection, this like wave or something that was still and constant, you know. And that was very peaceful, and I was really liking that. And then all of a sudden I heard something in the next room, and it was like, oh, that doesn't go with my image, with this feeling. And then I felt it wasn't still. I wasn't still anymore. I had to take into consideration this what I would say was noise, and it kind of was interrupting this very harmonious feeling, still feeling peaceful I had. And so then I thought, oh, this is what we have to do, isn't it? That we're always met with things in life. You know, we're just, how do I meet that? And how do I, that wasn't stillness. It didn't feel still. Didn't feel quiet, felt noisy. And so how do I meet that? And how do I incorporate it and integrate it or whatever. Anyway, it was really an interesting kind of contrast of an experience. And it was not anything I expected. So it's kind of interesting to think about.
Great. Thank you, Lauren. Yeah, that quality of, it sounds like when you were describing that, a sense of stillness, which is kind of observing the movement, you know, stillness observing noise or activity. And that's when we're able to simply, you know, rest in observation, and there's no sense of me having to do anything with. You're just kind of, okay, there's that stillness is observing. Doesn't really matter what's happening in the moment until there's something that that triggers, right? And then suddenly then you can feel that noise, the noise becomes engaged. And that's an important piece. I want to just expand upon that a second, because there's a little trap. You didn't fall into this trap, but sometimes we do fall into this trap that we really like those quiet moments. We like that place of stillness. And when we lose that, we're always trying to kind of get back to that, trying to find that stillness again. And then we really argue with the fact, you know, when life is taking us away, we see that noise in another room. We'll say, it, you know, that's a metaphor for, you know, your spouse having a bad day or your car breaking down or whatever it might be, big or small. And it becomes, that's the problem. If I got rid of that, then I'll get back to that stillness. That's the key thing, is when your mind says, if I get rid of this, then I can be happy again. Then I can be still. You know, we use that all the time in how we endlessly chase things in our lives. Do the same thing in meditation. If I can only get back on the retreat, if I only can get my roommate to shut up, then I can finally be quiet. Then I can be still. But instead, learning, that's the art of the vertical question, is even in the midst of that, can I still call it forth? Can I still sense that stillness and realize that, you know, that noise, that reaction is just, that's what I'm adding on to the moment and being willing to meet that. And that's a trap that we can fall into, you know, for years if we're not aware of it, that we're always trying to get back to those blissful states. When I'm about to teach a retreat with Narayan, and when people come on the retreat and they talk about, oh, I can't wait to be here again. The last retreat was so blissful. I know that, oh no, it's going to be a rough retreat for them because they're looking for that bliss. They're looking for that ease. And of course, that's not what's going to be there. But when someone shows up, just, okay, I'm open to seeing what arises, then they're much more aligned. They're much more in that learning experience. And that's ideally what we try to cultivate again and again, is that the willingness to simply, okay, what's here? I'm reacting to it. Let me meet that. Let me meet the reaction. Let me meet my reaction to my reaction. All right. So thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
So Ed, let me come back to you in a second. I want to see if there's anyone in the room and then we'll come back to you. Anybody in the room like to share? Yes.
Hi.
Do you mind getting in the mic so they can hear you online? You can just pick that whole thing up if you like.
This guy here?
Yeah, just pick that up and we can. The one right there. That one.
This guy?
Yes.
All right. Is that working?
Let me get back here. Can you hear him okay?
Yep. Yeah. Okay, great. Okay. Yeah, it was like a couple of sort of process things.
Sorry, let me just get the camera. Okay, good.
Yeah, my name's Peter.
Hi, Peter.
One was, like, I found when my partner was asking a question, I would spend time formulating a really good answer. Mm-hmm. But then it might be another minute before she actually asked the question. And by the time she asked the question, my incredibly insightful, elegant, and apropos answer was like no longer relevant.
Yeah.
You know? And so it was just the exercise itself, while feeling awkward in some ways, was this great exercise in being in the moment.
Yes.
You know? And then the other thing, that this is more of a question really, just, and again, about the process of doing these dyads, is I found too that when I was asking, sometimes my partner would give a fairly complex answer. And I think I've been schooled to just come right back with asking the question again, but it just, what, you know, felt like the right thing to do was actually to take in what they had said, for me to take in what they had said. And that took some time. And so that was different than when I've done this in the past. So I don't know if there's a right way or a wrong way, but I was just noticing that.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. Yeah, so that's some great observations. So that, starting with the second one you mentioned, that, you know, however someone responds, you just, I think that you did the right thing. You just kind of sense into what feels appropriate. Because sometimes it's really helpful just to be quiet, to have the answer be just kind of met, held by the stillness. And then, and like as you did, you ask the question again. You know, sometimes I've done this dyad and the other person hasn't said anything. And then I just hold that. And I just periodically, I just ask the question and let them, maybe just the stillness is their answer. the quiet is the answer. So there's, you know, it's two people. So you have to kind of, each time it's a little different dance. And then, like, as you said, the first observation around kind of that, find the great pithy answer and how to really, and then, but if enough time goes by, then it just doesn't have its, and that's, it does teach you that sense of letting go, of not clinging and just letting things rise and speaking it as it's arising. Okay. Thank you, Peter. All right. So let's go back to Ed. Would you like to ask something or share something?
Yeah, Tim, I didn't quite know what to expect from this exercise. I've never done this or anything quite like it before. And I wasn't sure that I understood the instructions. So I'm kind of going out on a limb. the question was, where is there noise, or where is your noise? And I just, as at least a starting point, just took it very literally and kind of looked for what auditory sensations were present around. I've experienced enough stillness in meditation to know very well what you're talking about globally with this, with your talk and about what the this particular ox picture is. But I had difficulty making the connection between the exercise, the way I was doing it, and the stillness or lack of stillness. But as I got into it, I was looking at these. There were three things that kept held in prominence, and I was watching them change, and I just kind of being with those sensations and wondering, you know, whether they would change or that sort of thing. So that's what I did with these few minutes, and I guess I need to hear more of people and do this more often to see what this type of exercise can do. Just my comment and question. What did I do right or wrong? Or what can I do better? Or is this okay?
Sure. Yeah. Like the first part about, like, with the question, where is our noise? You can take that any way that you want. And sometimes it's helpful just to say, okay, there's external noise. There's this fan, and there's the traffic, and there's the rustling here and there, whatever it might be. And just kind of let yourself, you know, each moment checking to see what arises from that question. And then over time, you start to see more and more things, or maybe you see different elements of it. And it's kind of a, who knows where it will go, what will arise. Some questions really resonate, some are not so, doesn't resonate as much. But it's the key, I think, for myself when I do this, is to really each moment checking in with a sense of innocence, without any agenda. Okay, what arises from that question? You know, and be as honest as I can. Does that help, Ed?
So it's kind of like a koan, maybe. It doesn't have to be, there's no particular agenda to it. But there's a beginning point, something to spark your investigation or your consideration, or just looking to see what's there. Is that approximately the right concept?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, there's not a answer that you're trying to get to, or the right answer. It's really a process of taking a mind that may be scattered, distracted, and learning how to, okay, just focus it again and again on this one question. And the person asking the question, usually we meditate, we focus on something, then we get distracted and get sleepy. But the person says, gently, come back. Where's our noise in this moment? Okay, where's our noise in this moment? And you just see what arises. Yeah, so it goes where it goes, and over time you start to get more of a sense of that, how it works. Different partners, different ways of working with it. That all applies. All right. Thank you, Ed. Just a second. Sure. Let me get you back online. Okay. Can you hear him okay? Go ahead, Carlito.
Testing. Thank you for doing this exercise. I found it really useful. To put things in context, I was sitting today, and it's kind of a long sit, and it seems like the longer I sit, often earlier memories arise. and this very early memory of me. I'm going to date myself seriously here, but I was riding there used to be a little tram that would go through Seattle Center, and that has been torn down for decades. But anyway, I have this really early memory of me as a small kid riding in this tram popped up. And then that was surprising. But then the just severe craving around it was like, wow, what's going on here? You know, and I was just observing it and just wondering why, you know. And then during the dyad, my vertical question was connection. And so the opposite was disconnection. And after like the second or third iteration, I kind of realized that I think that craving was really around the fact that I don't have connection now. And so and I'm in flux, which is kind of disconnected inherently. And so I think maybe the insight I had, which I think is useful, or maybe not, is that these images are arising because they represent times of strong connection, which is something I'm craving. So this dyad is really helpful, at least intellectually, in the sense that it's like, oh, maybe that's why this is arising. I don't think it makes it any easier, but anyway, so thank you for this exercise.
You're welcome. Let me see if I can paraphrase that if you had trouble hearing because of the fans. So the dyad, a memory came up around, you know, time from youth, where there's a time of feeling really connected, really a sense of belonging, and an insight around it that maybe that moments of those memories come up kind of highlight how much you yearn for that in present day. You know, and that's like, oh, there's that, you know, going back in the past where I had that and how you're searching for it right here, right now. And it's, you know, that's, you know, it's like, it's a clearer touching of that pattern, touching of that pain, that sense of lack, of insufficiency of the moment. And it's often, you know, the moment, you know, how do we determine it's insufficient? You know, sometimes we look at our past and say, well, those moments were sufficient. Yeah, compared to this moment, it's not. Or sometimes we're going to the future. In the future, I'm going to be much more complete. Yeah, we imagine that in the future. Once I get that role, that job, that partner, that house, that degree, that whatever, that card, that possession, then I'll be complete. You know, we have this kind of illusion there. But, you know, you're touching into that movement into the past and how. So I think the part that has, you know, perhaps, you know, a deeper potential is to really tune into that sense of lack here in this moment. Not in a way that's heavy or overwhelming, but just, and then say, is this moment really is lacking? You know, where's, you know, and then combined with your other question, where's their connection? So touch into that pain of lack, of disconnection. And then say, okay, right now, like, can you feel the connection as we're talking? Like, can you feel the connection with your body against the chair, you know, and so call forth, where's their connection right now? And so then that illusion that somehow the present moment lacks connection, you start to see through it more and more.
Thank you.
Right, thank you, Carlito. Okay, we are come to our 9 o'clock hour. And so I want to thank everyone for your engagement, and hopefully that was helpful. You got a taste of that quality of inquiry and how that becomes really a gateway into, you know, that this some of these states seem so far away. I have to go on retreats for weeks and weeks, but it's actually, it can be accessible just by a change of how we see, seeing clearly through insight that you can call up right here, right now, the immediacy.